So, what's trending?
Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Timory on Relevant Radio.
Talk about a conversation. Vaccinations. That's one that's a real table topic for Thanksgiving. Well, we're going to be talking about this with scientist Dr. Stacy Tresenkos in just a little bit. We'll be talking about scientific research and the shocking information about how aborted babies are used. We'll also discuss the coronavirus vaccine, Moderna, and how there's actually major controversy with regard to its use of aborted baby parts. How we got there? How do we get to this vaccination? We'll be discussing that in just a little bit with Dr. Stacy Tresenkos. If you'd like to join the conversation, the number's 1-888-914-9149, or you can go ahead and head over to my Instagram story. I've posted a couple pieces of information about today's show. Some questions I'd love to hear from you. You can ask your question there if you'd like to be heard during the show. You can find me at Timmerie. That's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E. News came out this week regarding abortion and Medicaid funding. There's been a five-year-long battle surrounding laws passed both in Texas, Louisiana, and even influencing Mississippi. Can Planned Parenthood receive funding, Medicaid funding, yes or no? Well, Texas blocked all funding to Planned Parenthood, but then this was blocked by a three-judge appeal court panel that essentially made it so that funds were still allowed to go to Planned Parenthood. The bottom line is that when these funds for Medicaid go through, funnel through Planned Parenthood, whether it goes directly to pay for an abortion or indirectly by subsidizing abortion their services, the bottom line is that it's blood money with Planned Parenthood. The way money is moved and shifted around, there's a problem here. Planned Parenthood is in the business of performing abortions. We could say a lot about their business model and so forth, but the bottom line is that this Medicaid funding has to do with funding in the government, funding that we pay into. And so there are just objections from you and I that we do not want to pay for the death and destruction of a baby, the destruction of the family unit, the harm and long-term impact that an abortion will have on a woman. So the great news is this. The Federal Appeals Court, the 5th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals, this week ended up saying, hey, actually, Planned Parenthood doesn't have to receive Medicaid funding in Texas and Louisiana. Also, Mississippi. So what we're seeing is that this is potentially going to be a case that goes to the Supreme Court of the United States. What will happen? I don't know. But what I do know is that there is major conscionable objections to us and our government paying for abortion or subsidizing abortion in any way. And so it's important that we continue to speak up and put pressure on cases such as these, because the bottom line is, and we'll talk about this in just a little bit, we live in a culture right now that even among the pro-life community, there's been a sense of apathy on the abortion issue. We've started to just live with abortion, funding abortion, with abortion clinics right next to us, within our own communities, right next to where we shop. I went into a doctor's appointment the other day, and within that same parking lot, there's a Planned Parenthood, this nice little business, and there are all the 40 Days for Life pro-life individuals standing on the street corner, waving and smiling and praying. I was definitely their target audience because I'm trying to just make my way into the parking lot, and they're trying to chase me down because they think I'm in their target range and I am pregnant. But how sad that is, that we see people who are willing to stand on the street corners being that last stand before that baby in that baby's death chamber. Yet so many of us are so okay with continuing to fund abortion. We have to wake up. We have to have those uncomfortable conversations that may come up this Thanksgiving. We're going to talk about same-sex marriage and the pulse of the culture, about how most people think, hey, no big deal. What's so wrong about it? Maybe you'll be discussing it if you're even invited to family dinner this year. I don't know, California. We won't go there right now. If you want to hear a little more about that, we discussed that on Tuesday and Friday last week. You can catch the podcast. But these are important issues that we need to continue to be willing to speak up and take a stand. Because this is a point in history where we will either continue to see this plague of abortion, this lifestyle of abortion, this funding of abortion, or we could take a stand and see a culture change one heart, one mind at a time, even if laws don't change. No matter what the outcome of various elections may be, we can see lives changed. Looking at an article earlier this week, and it had to do with how the biggest parenting problem right now, because of COVID, lockdowns, homeschooling, virtual learning, is really keeping kids occupied. Now, I thought this was really fascinating because I am one of those nerds. I was homeschooled through and through all the way. And I do find it fascinating that some parents are so distraught over having their children home. I'm sorry if I'm going to be a little blunt to start this conversation, but buck up, parents. You can do this. Your kids are your responsibility. Even if they go to school, they're still your responsibility. Just like on a sick day, some parents become a little overwhelmed, and I get it. Balancing work, job, home, family, relationships, all the various things. In fact, we know that overall female satisfaction has declined because women are expected to do it all. And so at the end of the day, though, you may be frustrated because there's more responsibility on your back right now, but you're their parent. And I look back to what has the church taught with regard to marriage and family. The parents are the primary educators of their children. And what's that main mission of marriage? The procreation and education of children. And so how can kids be occupied with learning, social interaction, character formation, growth? Each child is a unique human being. I think that this is something I saw so intensely homeschooling. You know, my siblings and I all had different passions and cares, boys, girls, various age ranges, and different things had to be done to entertain some of us. And it was okay to be bored. Maybe there was less of a challenge at that time because the level of technology wasn't as intense and in our faces. Go outside. Lock your kids outside for a couple hours. Let them go for a walk around the block. Sometimes I think this issue of occupying children in part has to do with this fear of letting them out of sight. Supervised sight. It's such, you know, kind of this confusion. I was reading a study the other day and it was talking about how, you know, so many young girls are living such stagnant lifestyles, teenagers. They don't go to the mall. They don't go and hang out. And it was saying that this age group spends, what is it? I think for high schoolers, an average of 7 hours a day on social media. And if I remember correctly, it was around 5 hours a day for those middle age years. And at the same time, they're not engaging socially as much out in public. And when they do, say, hang out with a friend or a group of friends, the parents are always there. And so what it was pointing to was the fact that kids used to be less supervised. That they could spend an hour or two and be dropped off at the mall and the parent wasn't sitting there the whole time. And so it does bring up questions about how have we changed how we've looked at parenting the last few years? Why is it that a kid can go unmonitored for an average of 7 hours a day on social media, but they can't sit next to their friend on a bench at the mall, just looking around at people, window shopping? It's something to think about and perhaps another perspective on keeping kids occupied during changing times. And of course, that is if your malls are even open. You go to the park. I don't know. Be creative. What did you do when you were a kid? My guest today is Dr. Stacy Trisenkos. Now, Dr. Trisenkos will actually be joining us a little more regularly here on Trending when our little miss is on her way, the baby's on the way, and I will be out for a little bit. Dr. Trisenkos will actually be joining you as someone I'm very excited to introduce to you, having conversations around faith, science, and those important trending issues in our culture. Dr. Trisenkos, thank you for joining me today.
Oh, thank you so much, Timmery. It is an absolute joy to be here.
Now, you're the executive director of Bishop Joseph Strickland's St. Philip Institute of Catechesis and Evangelization in Tyler, Texas, and you are constantly bringing your science background with chemistry to the forefront of the conversation surrounding faith. And so you and I have been talking as we're leading up to my time away with a baby. And speaking of babies, there's a lot going on in the world of research surrounding abortion and the fact that abortion is just absolutely fueling a whole world of research right now. You wrote an article recently for the National Catholic Bioethics Center that was shocking. And bear with us, this is tough information to go through, but you named 5 studies that came out just in the last couple of months, documenting dozens, if not far more than that, of babies who have been aborted and exploited in research. Can you share with us a little more?
Yes, I'd be happy to. First, I just want to say I really appreciate the conversation you were having earlier about our kids. I was waiting and I was texting to my husband to make sure my son got home from his friend's house in the dark because he was walking.
So, I love it.
It was very good. No, I appreciate your comments there. As a mother of 7, which is my primary vocation over all of this. And it's why I care so much about this issue of aborted children being used in research. A lot of people probably remember David DeLeiden's expose with the undercover videos.
Yes.
And I remember thinking, God bless him for what he did, but you really don't need to go undercover with the video to get proof that this practice goes on in our society all over the world. All you need to do is look in the scientific literature. And so I've been doing that just to bring some awareness to this, and I plan to post and write about it a lot more. For example, though, I opened up Scientific Reports. It's a journal. And in September, there was a report that they were taking the scalps off of second trimester aborted babies and grafting the scalp, the skin, full thickness skin, they called it, with hair follicles onto the backs of baby mice. They wanted to see if they could grow a full thickness human skin graft on the mice so they could raise the mice and let the skin continue to grow and produce human cells so they can then use the mice, the humanized mice, as for tests. And it wasn't just the scalp. They also were cutting out the spleen and the liver and other organs in the same child so they could have a humanized mice that had internal organs and external skin. And they were giving the mice staph infections because they wanted to see how the other internal organs processed it. And the picture in the scientific article was disgusting. I can't even hardly talk about it, but it was pictures of the backs of mice, little short white hairs on the white lab mice. And on those backs were patches of baby hair growing about an inch long. And they're just doing this. Like, they think it's great that they have these little mice models for research.
And essentially, what does this come down to? They want to know more about skin infections and how to handle them. So we're going to take babies and we're going to take baby skin and we're going to put it onto mice and we're going to grow baby human hair on the mice. And, you know, I was sitting here trying to eat lunch as I was reading through your publication. And I went, oh, good Lord, I couldn't even tell my husband why. I got up, I started to do something for a few minutes, came back to my food. This just makes your stomach turn. And if you and other people like you were not doing the research and exposing it, people wouldn't realize that we are fueling a research machine. In fact, in your article, you said, how will abortion ever end if it feeds a research machine. And we don't get that it's literally baby hair growing on the backs of mice just to study a skin infection that many of us have recovered from, that is staph.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Exactly. And it's hard to spot in the scientific research unless you know. I mean, I've been doing it for years and I know what to look for. And I'm hoping to start training Catholic students in colleges that are studying science or medicine how to look for this stuff, too, so we can start exposing it more.
Mm-hmm. Now, tell me a little bit, because there are four other studies that you name, but yeah. This one having to do with the scalp skin from the baby on the rats, making little humanized rats. This is coming from the University of Pittsburgh. It's studying skin infections. You mentioned the body parts, not just the skin from the scalp, but other parts of the body as well. Who's funding this, and what are the ages of the babies that have been aborted to create this research?
This is at the University of Pittsburgh in the Department of Infectious Diseases and Microbiology. And the babies were, they said, I'm looking on here, they were in the second trimester, 18 to 20 weeks at the McGee Women's Hospital at the University of Pittsburgh Medical Center. So they have a tissue bank there at the University of Pittsburgh. And they collect these tissues when women go in to have abortions. They sign written consent forms that say their babies can be used in research. And, you know, to anybody out there who encounters a pro-choice person who says it's not really a human. No, they're using these babies precisely because they are human.
Yeah.
That's why they want them.
And to put it into perspective, you said that these babies were 18 to 20 weeks being used through the University of Pittsburgh. I found out that I was having a baby girl at 14 weeks, and in that ultrasound, we could see that baby's thick, beefy, developed thighs in those images where, I mean, clearly a baby had thicker skin around those thighs than other parts of her. I mean, just to humanize that for just a moment. And so then I'm looking at the other research, and there's research having to do with the impact of infants and flame retardant and Down syndrome. Tell us a little bit more about some of these other studies.
Okay. Yeah. And I'm sorry to your audience, because I really do hate going through this. It feels kind of like you're sticking a hand down into hell to show people what's going on. There was another study, and it was done in July of 2020, the summer. Fetuses, children with Down syndrome, were used to study leukemia. So there's this... And this one was done in the Netherlands, but they cut out the intestines, livers, leg bones, and skin from the babies. Some of them had Down syndrome and some of them didn't. And they had a theory that there's something that goes on in the early stages of human development when you have Down syndrome that makes you more likely to have leukemia. And so they wanted to check children in the early stages of human development. They were all 12 to 17 weeks gestational age. And one thing that I see a lot of times in these, how do they know how old the children are? They actually take the little bodies and they lay them on the bench, and they either measure the crown to rump length, which you've probably heard in an ultrasound, or they measure the feet. They measure their feet, and that's how they know how old they are. And they do this. I mean, I can't imagine how the people doing these things are okay with it.
Well, and when you talk about measurements, if you're just joining us, you're listening to Trending with Timory. That's Dr. Stacey Trisankos, a scientist, researcher, chemist, and full of faith and on fire, really pointing to the lines between faith and morality and research and science. You just talked about measuring, you know, parts of the body to determine if they're the right gestational age for this Down syndrome and leukemia study. And you mentioned at the beginning here that David DeLeiden went in undercover and he exposed with those videos, as there were people going into the abortion clinics who weren't abortion workers, specifically there to identify which babies and which baby parts were the right baby parts to be used for research. You know, whether or not, oh, look, that woman is a certain race, she's a certain stage in her pregnancy. Oh, look, this person, we need three livers, or we need X so many of this. This is what we're talking about. And for some reason, Stacey, we're so okay, and we'll talk about this more later, to just sit back and say, well, it's being used for health. and research. Yeah. So shouldn't those babies' lives go to, you know, mean something? I know we'll talk about that in a second, but that just puts it in perspective.
Yeah.
As we continue to talk about some of these other studies. So Yale this year did a second trimester study with 15 babies. Tell us a little bit about this one.
In July, a team at Yale in their Department of Immunology published this in Science Journal. And I just want to say that is the biggest and most prestigious journal to be published in the world.
Wow.
And Science Journal published it on the development of immunities in newborns. So they're looking at how something we're all familiar with right now, when viruses attack the body, you know, it fights back with these white blood cells, and your body produces antibodies against certain antigens. They were wondering, how is it that newborns seem to fight infections so well when they haven't had very much time to build up antibodies? And so it's a question they had, and the only way to answer this question is to investigate the bodies of children that are pre-newborn. And that's what they did. They got 15 unborn children that were aborted in the second trimester of pregnancy from the Birth Defects Research Laboratory at the University of Washington. And they took blood, bone marrow, and stool samples. Stool samples from adults, but they took blood and bone marrow. And they were comparing the antibodies in adults to these second trimester aborted children. And it was all, you know, it was funded by the National Institute of Health. It was funded by a fellowship at Yale, and it was funded by the Pew Charitable Trust.
Wow. I mean, those are 15 babies right there. 15 yep. babies. And I know in your research, they say, okay, the moms consented to this. But moms do not realize what they're consenting to. The forms, as we know, are very ambiguous if and when they do actually sign it. And they're focusing on an abortion. They're not paying attention to the type of paperwork they're signing. They're just looking at, how can I end this pregnancy and have as little discussion as possible about it, because I don't want to think any more about what I'm actually doing. And so I want to come back, Dr. Trisenkos, and discuss Japan's fetal bank, that they've been collecting aborted baby parts since 1961, and they have over 45,000 so-called specimens. We'll come back discussing this and the ethical outlook in terms of the coronavirus vaccine with Dr. Stacey Trisenkos here on Trending with Tim Murray. The Relevant Radio Studio line is sponsored by Catholic Order of Foresters. Information about employment opportunities and their flexible premium life insurance plans are available at relevantradio.com/forester.
Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Timory on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
We're back with Dr. Stacey Trisenkos. We will post a link in the podcast notes to the St. Philip Institute, where you can find talks by Dr. Trisenkos. And by the way, if you didn't hear earlier on, when I'm away bonding with baby, Dr. Trisenkos will be one of the people here joining you for a great conversation about trending ideas, especially with regard to her background of faith and science and morality. We've been discussing the shocking scientific research where aborted baby parts are used. We were documenting just 5 studies from the last couple of months that she has published, has discussed the publication of, that have used dozens upon dozens of aborted baby parts. And I think one of the most shocking parts in that is that since 1961, Japan has had this fetal bank that they have been continuing to develop. Can you tell us more about this fetal bank in Japan and how they're using aborted babies?
Yes, it's called the Kyoto Collection, Kyoto Collection of Human Embryos and Fetuses. In 1961, it is the largest collection of human embryos in the world. There is a maternity protection law in Japan. Women obtaining abortions for socioeconomic reasons consent to the use of their babies for scientific research. They have 45,000 specimens.
Wow. So, yeah. I mean, that's just shocking to hear. A maternity protection program. So, yeah. Apparently, they're somehow protecting these babies by using them for scientific research. 45,000. Now, when you say specimens, are you talking about separate baby body parts? Are we talking about 45 different babies?
I take it to mean babies. Oh, yeah, because they store them. They have ones that had a variety of external malformations, and they just have this collection. So when there's a study that needs to be done, there is I hate calling them specimens, but there's a child there they can use. And yeah.
I mean, this is something you just stop. You need that pause for a moment to even process this. And maybe this is something you are hearing for the very first time. I remember when David DeLeiden did his undercover sting operation, what, it was 7 years ago now, I think?
Yeah.
People were shocked because they hadn't heard about this. But a lot of people within the pro-life movement, if you've been in front of that abortion clinic, you see the researchers coming in and out, picking up the procurement agencies, picking up these aborted baby parts. And so this brings us even more so to the ethical question. Before we go there, we did have a question come in, and I just wanted to touch on it briefly. We know that it's actually illegal to sell aborted baby parts for abortion clinics to sell aborted baby parts. This is why Planned Parenthood and other abortion groups and procurement agencies are getting in trouble because they're benefiting financially. And so people are asking, well, how are institutes getting baby body parts? Dr. Trisenkos, it's because you may not charge for it or you may not pay for it, but you can donate it for so-called research or find funding in other ways of partnerships with schools and abortion clinics that allow for this research to go covertly undercover.
Yes. Yes. And they find all, that's why I want to train our Catholic students studying science right now to start looking for this, because they find all kind of ways to kind of hide it. But at the same time, because it's scientific research, they have to report their methods. And so the only way they can really hide it is to get complete private funding. And I've seen a few research trails disappear off the public scientific literature because they went to private funding where they didn't have to report any of this. So they kind of make up their own rules as they go.
We're going to discuss Moderna's COVID vaccine in just a little bit. But before we go there, let's touch on the human, the faith-based, the moral side of exploiting aborted babies. Some people argue, I don't support abortion, but if these babies are going to be aborted, can't we just benefit from their bodies in science? And, you know, my first reaction, Dr. Sankos, is one of the corporal works of mercy is to bury the dead. And when I hear people say that, my heart just aches because we are literally objectifying and experimenting on these babies rather than recognizing they are people to be loved, whether they were wanted or unwanted, and they deserve a just and loving burial.
Yes, they deserve to be more than codes and pie charts and pictures of hair on the backs of mice. They deserve to have, you know, I tell people, and I have to do this myself, when it gets really bad and I feel just very overwhelmed and in despair over this, I do take a moment and I encourage everybody else to do the same, to pray for those children who had no one to pray for them. Take a minute and pray for them, because their souls are everlasting. They are still alive. They are somewhere, you know, and they are loved very much by their creator. And if they didn't find love while they were briefly on this world, this planet with us, we could still love them. That's the great thing about what the Catholic Church teaches us. We have an everlasting soul and we can still pray for them and show them love.
Dr. Trisenkos, gosh, I'm even just emotional thinking about this. So I've worked with a number of crisis pregnancy centers over the years, and it used to be some years ago, not long after Roe versus Wade, that the babies that had been miscarried, you know, you'd have these embryology museums where you could see these babies that had been preserved. I know you've seen these.
Yes.
And you see these babies. Well, the pro-life community for a time, they don't do this now, had these babies that they would take when they go and teach in the classroom settings. And so they were babies that had been miscarried and preserved. And one of the crisis pregnancy centers I worked for there, I was doing some work and I was going through the cupboards and I found two babies. One of them was 12 weeks in a glass tube that had been preserved. And another was, I think, around 22 weeks. And I didn't know what to do. And here are these babies. I didn't know that they were used for research or for study or for presentations. And these are babies that were miscarried. They weren't even babies that were aborted. And to see even a baby that was miscarried and a parent who had consented to this preservation, it was disturbing to see that that baby was exploited for teaching in such a circumstance. It was shocking. And I remember when, you know, I brought it up and I came out and I, you know, basically went to one of my bosses and said, what are we going to do about this? And why on earth do we have it? And so we had to go through the process of burying these babies. And it was hard to find a cemetery that was even willing to bury those babies.
Yeah.
And that is just, it shows the objectification and just utter disregard for human life that tends to happen. And that same disregard occurs when you and I say, it's okay to research on these babies' bodies.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. I mean, it's a big hill. It's like trying to explain why we don't use contraception or IVF. To someone who's not really, really in tune with the church teaching about the human person, body and soul, made in the image and likeness of God, an eternal destiny, you know, for someone who's not in tune with all of that stuff, when you say that life-saving research ought to be predicated on the preservation of human dignity, they just don't know what you're talking about. I mean, they don't know what human, our atheistic culture doesn't know what human dignity even means. And it doesn't sound like a good argument because it sounds so abstract.
Yeah. And yet it's as simple as this. It's science over people. It's not science versus politics. It's people. And that's the bottom line. And I know in your work that you recently published, you note St. John Paul II and Evangelium Vitae and how he says no. It's a no, a hard no to experimenting on aborted babies. So this brings us to the broader question that is relevant to today. The Moderna COVID vaccine, it has been brought into question with regard to whether or not it is ethical for us to use. Now, you did work for Archbishop Strickland there in the Diocese of Tyler, Texas. He's saying it's not sanctioned, and I assume this is due to much of your research. Can you give us the information? Because there's a lot of mixed information. Some people are saying it's morally okay, and others are saying it's not.
Oh my goodness. It is what we're really getting into the weeds, but look, I think this discussion needs to happen. And to anyone out there concerned that, you know, some of us are disagreeing in the Catholic bioethics world, it's okay, because this is how we chart the way towards more understanding and more truth. And it's okay. These conversations need to happen. It's not personal, it's dogma. You know, we're trying to figure things out. But to just sort of sum it up, what's at issue is that Moderna and Pfizer, particularly because they're in the lead right now, they have used the HEK-293, which is human embryonic kidney from experiment number 293, an aborted child from the 1970s. They're using a cell line derived from that child, but they're not using it in the production of the vaccine like other vaccines do. They're using it in the research and development. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so some bioethicists are saying it's okay because the production won't involve it. It's okay if the research and development did. I'm saying, look, I work for DuPont as a senior research chemist, and I'm telling you that research and development don't end when production begins. Research and development feed what the production's going to be. And so you can never separate those things. It's part of the scientific method. And so I'm saying it's not okay if they use that cell line in the research and development or testing. None of it's okay. Mm-hmm. But what's at issue is that I think these bioethicists want to make sure Catholics know that if we have no other choice, we are permitted to use these vaccines. But it's kind of like they're running into a corner and waiting for somebody to paint them into it. And I'm saying get out of that corner and fight because nobody's got a paintbrush yet. Like, we don't have to be painted into the corner where we have no other choice but a vaccine mm-hmm. that's produced using fetal cell lines. We can change what those companies do now before they go to production.
That's Dr. Stacey Trasenkos here on Trending with Timory. She'll be filling in for me while I'm away. Scientists focused on faith and honesty and integrity and scientific research and how faith and science collide in everyday life. Dr. Trasenkos, with the coming new baby of ours, well, she's already with us, but her birth, one of the big questions that people feel like they can, you know, overstep in the conversation has to do with vaccinations. And, you know, at the same time, we talk about infant vaccinations, child vaccinations, COVID vaccinations. I hold a hard and fast line that if there has been any research done on aborted babies by a company in any way whatsoever, I cannot personally, in good conscience, participate in the use of that vaccine. And I know that our bishops and even the Vatican has said, if there are no other options here, you can. I can't go there. And it keeps bringing me back to a conversation I had with my pastor the other day, where we have to understand from a perspective of moral theology, if we truly believe something is immoral and we don't follow our conscience, we are culpable for that, mm-hmm. for that sin, for confessing that sin. And so I think that this is where we have the information. We know about the connection of Moderna and the other company with regard to the leading COVID vaccine. This is a tough decision that people are going to have to make, but at least you have the information. And I hope that more people will follow the big picture of how this research yeah. is being funded.
Yes. You know, and I think that's where the difference is. I'm not really focused on the calculus of the moral theology. I am focused on the bigger picture because, as you know, and as you're really about to have to face, some of the childhood vaccines are produced using fetal cell lines. And it's a really hard decision to have to make. You know, do I use this vaccine or do I not? Because on one hand, you want to protect your child and the community, but on the other hand, you want to say no to those. And the Vatican says it's right to abstain from using these vaccines if it can be done mm-hmm. without causing harm. And I think with the COVID-19 vaccine, for a long time, you can make the argument that I don't need to take the vaccine right now if I'm not in a right. vulnerable part of the population.
And I never say this. This is the first time I think I've ever said this on air. But when I hear that these vaccines are being researched with aborted baby parts, I say, hell no. No, yeah. Like, this is where it ends. It stops here. I'm sorry, but I can't continue to be on this side where people are. And I know I'm going to get flack for saying that, but, and it's a tough one. You know, people think they can overreach on the vaccination conversations that parents are making, but this is a conversation that needs to be had, needs to be brought to the forefront. And final thought on this, and this is a big can of worms that we're going to have to follow up yeah. on. The bigger problem too is when we start to have a diseased view of the human person. Mm-hmm. So your child is endangering my kid because they were or were not vaccinated, or you're endangering me because you're not taking the COVID vaccine. That in and of itself is a big problem.
Yes, it's a big problem. And it, you know, that ties over into organ donation and so many things, but it's infected our society. I mean, one of these other papers that I didn't even have in the thing I wrote for National Catholic Bioethics Center, there's a paper just last week. I opened my science journal, and right there, they're trying to build a fetal cell atlas, and they're planning to collect fetuses of all ages to be able to determine the genetics of all their cells, to be able to map out a full time and space atlas of human development. And guess who's funding it? You were talking about funding. This one is funded by the Chan Zuckerberg Initiative. So Mark Zuckerberg, they talk about a future for everyone. They want to make the world a better place for the wanted children, and they're funding using all the unwanted children's bodies to do it. It's just so messed up.
Dr. Trisankos, thank you for joining us in the conversation. Thank you for coming on Trending today and in the days to come as our baby's on the way. I look forward to continuing the conversation both together and you with others while I'm away. You can find Dr. Trisankos's work. We'll post links to that in the podcast today. And we will be right back here on Trending with Timmery.
Timmery will be right back. You can reach her on Instagram and Twitter at Timmery. That's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E.
Sponsorship for Trending with Timmery is provided by Catholic Singles, a dating app that connects single Catholics based on faith, values, and shared interests. More info at CatholicSingles.com.
We're talking about what you're thinking about. You're listening to Trending with Timmery on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Oh boy, when are we going to talk about vaccinations, the bigger picture, where you stand on them? It's a topic that I have wanted to discuss, but we have not gone into. Not just the abortion side of it. Parents are struggling with what to do. We hear these links to autism and other health issues. That's a topic to come. If you want to throw your thoughts in now, feel free to reach out to me on social media. You can head over to relevantradio.com/trending to connect. I have a couple minutes here that I want to touch on this, and Father Rocky and I will be discussing Advent in just a moment here, but there's something we need to discuss as we're getting ready to sit around that Thanksgiving table, and it has to do with our position on issues as Catholics. There was a pretty large study done recently that touches on the fact that many Catholics' view on homosexuality is that they support same-sex marriage. That is Catholics. Now, this isn't a huge surprise given that many Catholics are choosing not to follow what the church teaches. But to bring up just for a moment, what do we do when this conversation comes up with a friend or a family member at Thanksgiving dinner or after dinner when we're just trying to sit around? We have a responsibility to stand up for the family. To stand up for the rights of children, that a child deserves the right to a mother and a father. And when we get creative and try to create alternative lifestyles and forms of so-called marriage, which they can't be, it's between one man and one woman. It's the only way it works. When we do that, we put children and their lives, their livelihood, their development, their interaction socially with others, we put those children in a place to be denied a mother and or a father. We not only do that, but we create confusion about the purpose of a human sexuality. We create confusion about what a family is in a time when the people are hungry for real, authentic human connection. We see all these people protesting on the streets. We see all of these people who are going no contact and cutting off their parents because they're angry and they're upset. Well, it's because people are hungry for what the family is. And when we continue to say, hey, I'm Catholic, but I disagree with what the church teaches, and we allow others to just go down that path, we're actually impacting future children, future families, the livelihood of others. And so don't be afraid to talk about marriage as being between one man and one woman for the purpose of children, for raising children, and that kids have a right to their mom and their dad. You're listening to Trending with Timmery. Our executive director, Father Rocky, is here with us on Trending, and we're getting ready for Advent. Father Rocky, it's so good to have you here, and I want to hear a little bit about how you've benefited from the Advent season, and it's changed you.
Hey, it's great to be with you, Timmery. And I know you're in Southern California, so you never have snow for Christmas, do you?
I grew up in the mountains here in Southern California, so I have, but unfortunately we're in San Diego, so we're missing out on the snow this year.
Well, great. I'm glad I can tell your audience about a wonderful promotion we have at Relevant Radio beginning on Sunday. This Sunday, November 29th, is the first Sunday of Advent. And if you go to our website or to our app, you can sign up for a free daily Advent inspiration. They're backed by popular demand. It's a one-minute message or lesson each day of Advent about something that's going to help you prepare for Christmas. And when I was asked to compose these last year, I started writing writing down my ideas, and I came up with like 50 different ideas, Timory, but there's only 4 weeks in Advent, only 25 days, so I couldn't get to all of them. But I like it. And so you get an email in your box every day, and you can click on the link and listen to the audio message. And very happy you can do it. And then on the top of the page, you're going to see the progress that Joseph and Mary are making from Nazareth to Bethlehem. There's 25 dots, and they move a white silhouette of the donkey and Joseph and Mary towards Bethlehem. So lots to talk about. You know, talk about Christmas carols and Christmas cards and Christmas cookies, Christmas gifts, stockings, the Christmas nativity scene, the manger, and all of that, because we normally have so many wonderful memories of Christmas. And I bet you do as well, don't you, Timory?
Oh, I love Christmas, and I love the Advent season in particular. I started making a annual retreat the beginning of Advent and kind of going into that place of understanding
good
this
for you.
Is a mini Lent. It's
yep.
different. It's a preparation for Christ, and there's that going out into the desert as Christ did. You know, we think a lot about St. John and how St. John prepared the way for Christ, St. John the Baptist. Mm-hmm. So you're writing all of these Advent inspirations. How has Advent in the past really grown you and led you to write these inspirations?
Right. So I'm the youngest of eight, and I grew up in just a wonderful family. I had wonderful parents. I didn't know how lucky we were growing up. But Thanksgiving is always a big deal, right? We'd get together with all the Murphy cousins on my mom's side. And that was sort of the beginning of the holiday season. We knew Advent was coming and Christmas is right behind it. But little by little, my mother would be starting taking decorations out of the closet, putting them around the house. And then St. Nicholas Day would come, December 6th. And for some reason, we left our shoes outside the door of our bread room. We got up in the morning. There was usually a crisp $1 bill. And back in the 60s, that was a lot of money, right? A crisp $1 bill.
A lot of ice cream.
Well, yeah. And you get a little bag of gold coins that had chocolate in the inside. We're crazy about those things. We get some chocolate marshmallows and they have hot chocolate. And it was really kind of exciting because it was sort of an appetizer for Christmas. And then usually around St. Lucia's Day, Santa Lucia, we would get the Christmas tree out and start decorating and everything kind of a crescendo up until Christmas Eve, and the Christmas had all of its feasts of itself. And we weren't finished yet. We were just beginning. Because the Christmas season is 2 weeks, right, through
right.
the Epiphany and the baptism of the Lord. Sometimes people forget that because they're so eager for good news, they want to get Christmas going right now. In fact, I've seen that in the upper Midwest. A lot of people have their Christmas lights out already because they think they just want to get beyond COVID. They just want to get beyond the election
right.
and the riots and the mayhem of this past summer. And they want some good news. And Christ is always good news. Timory, what's your earliest memory of the Advent season or Christmas season in your own family?
I remember us having the Advent wreath at home and us, you know, getting to kids squabble over who got to light the pink candle, mm-hmm. the purple candle, and coming mm-hmm. together to pray those prayers before dinner. You know, I think it's the fact that we came together as a family for dinner and the Advent wreath only enriched the Advent season and prepared us even more. So it was an opportunity to pray and prepare our hearts for Christmas.
Good, good, good memory. And that's a Christian and Catholic tradition. I think it comes from the northern part of Europe, and there can be different colors of the candles. We always had that Advent wreath, and it was a little bit of a subdued season preparing for Christmas. Going to confession was always an important part in our family to prepare for Christmas and gathering the family around there. So I speak about the Advent wreath on Monday, the 30th, so you'll get that in your email box if you sign up for that Advent inspiration at Relevant Radio or relevantradio.com. Now, in your home, in Timory, when did you open Christmas gifts?
Ooh, it used to be we'd open them Christmas morning, but over the last handful of years, we've really been opening them Christmas Eve because we go to Christmas Eve Mass and everyone's home. And, you know, as our family's growing and getting older, not everyone can stick around all day on Christmas. So it's allowed us to be together and celebrate that night together with the giving of gifts. But Father, something you said really stood out to me. You said that you decorated your tree as a family on right around St. Lucie's feast day. Mm-hmm. Was this intentional, having to do with St. Lucie and the theme of light?
I don't know if it was an intentional, but that's the way I recall it. And St. Lucie and the Festival of Lights, I actually speak about that in my Advent inspiration on December 13th. It comes right after December 12th, which is a feast of Our Lady of Guadalupe. Now, here's what's really interesting if you get into the weeds on this. Our Lady of Guadalupe appeared to St. Juan Diego on December 9th, 10th, 11th, 12th, 1531. Right. That was when we were using the Julian calendar, named after Julius Caesar, although the Greeks invented it. And some 50 years later, we changed the calendar in the West to the Gregorian calendar, because the Julian calendar was 10 days off. So here's fascinating. December 12th, December 13th, 1531, Our Lady of Guadalupe was actually the winter solstice. Mm-hmm. And so the festival lights and all of that, it's kind of fascinating when you get into those weeds and all that. But, yeah, we had that, and we'd put the Christmas decorations on the tree and outdoors. We always had a manger scene. That was a big deal.
Right.
And my father would get sides of crates, wooden crates, and he would construct a little hut out in the front yard. And we put Mary and Joseph and Jesus there and the angels, and we'd get straw. And we put a spotlight on it, and we thought it was probably the best manger scene in the whole neighborhood. And it's a good thing for people to do, put that manger scene out there to celebrate the coming of Christ and let people know. And I remember that was always part of the tradition. We took a great deal of joy in it. We opened gifts on Christmas morning, but after Mass and after breakfast. We couldn't wait because we were up already 5 in the morning. Santa Claus had come. Everything was completely transformed, amazing. And only later I found out who Santa Claus was. And then I thought, wow, it's even more of a miracle. I don't know how they did it.
Talk about patience and waiting for those Christmas gifts, waiting for Santa to come. Let's get ready this Advent with Father Rocky. Sign up for those Advent inspirations at relevantradio.com, or you'll see them at the top banner on your Relevant Radio app.